Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to the Ooze with your host, Venger Satanis, and the Beast.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm T.C. Downey, and I'm here with my co-host, Venger Satanis. Venger, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. Yes, Satanis is the word, because I'm watching the first Church of Satan, Anton LaVey documentary called Satanis right now.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Definitely in keeping and in fitting with our show today, which is about Anton Zander LaVey, founder and high priest of the Church of Satan.
Right. Well, we actually, I guess I have a lot of different respects for the man, mainly for providing current modern philosophy of quote-unquote LaVeyan Satanism. But beyond that, I think he's an extremely interesting person because he seems to have kind of built the character and then kind of grew into the role of that. As it's pretty common knowledge, he was born Howard Stanton LaVey. And, Howard Stanton LaVey, I have a feeling, was far off of Anton Zander LaVey, which is the ending product that we've all come to appreciate.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
showbiz part of it that you're that you find fascinating, or what were you trying to say that the image that he portrayed and then slowly became,
Well, that's completely it. I mean, I was actually, I spent a little while this morning just, re-browsing the wiki page on Anton LaVey, and, there's a lot of things that are in discrepancy. Are undetermined as to whether they're fact or not. Like, for instance, LaVey claimed that he worked for a carnival some part of the Lion Act, and then he also played the organ and the, the clatope? That's the name of the instrument, the clatope.
Yeah.
For the circus, but there's he also claimed later he did the investigative photography for the police department of San Francisco, and there's just no record of any of these things. However, just because no record exists doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Right.
So he's kind of led this mythology of himself.
Right.
It's given us a bunch of ideas as to where he might have drawn influence from.
Exactly. In his life, we can see, I saw in the documentary I rewatched today that, he owned at least one lion, and, he definitely had lion tamer skills, and, he definitely had an eye for photography, for aesthetics, and that kind of ties in with the whole Command to Look photography book that was a big influence on him.
Right.
So, yeah, there's kind of like a mythology about him. You know, some of it might be self-created, some of it might be created by the people looking at him. And sometimes it's just, you know, the truth of his life. I don't know. It's all kind of mixed together. So, but to me, it doesn't really matter what's, you know, 100% factual and what isn't. It's, you know, whatever was presented in the autobiography, The Secret Life of a Satanist, which I read, you know, that was my first introduction to LaVey and the Church of Satan. And I read that way back, and I think it was a sophomore in high school. Yeah, something like that. And, you know, I just thought it was a fascinating tale, and he was an interesting guy, and it kind of all followed, and larger than life. And so I say, you know, whatever it is, if it's fiction or fantasy, you know, that's what it is, and that's who he is.
Sure, and there are, you know, undeniable attributes about the man. In that particular, well, actually, I don't think it's the documentary that you're watching. I think it was the Black Mass documentary. There were segments where they were actually interviewing supposed neighbors of LaVey. And
no, that's
one lady, is that the same documentary?
Yeah, that's the Satanist one, yeah.
That's the Satanist one. There's one lady in that who states that he was always very pleasant-looking, pleasant-mannered. His voice was very soothing. And so that gave her the heebie-jeebies because, you know, obviously if everything's right, something must be wrong is, you know, the normal mindset that people come into.
Right.
And, I mean, he was just, if I could say, magical and use it, you know, in the perspective of character. And LaVey was certainly magical.
Right. Kind of like the serial killer that reminds everyone of the nice boy next door. But really there's things going on inside that sometimes people can't see or sometimes people detect unconsciously, but you know, and it's usually the quote-unquote nice people in the world that in everyday life that when you really get down to it, they're just assholes. But sometimes the people that are the most pleasant and are very nice have the deepest levels of darkness inside them. And
my great grandfather actually used to tell me all the time that as nice as a person can be is as mean as they can be, as good as they can be is as evil as they can be. So if you meet somebody who's just knockout sweet, watch out because the flip side of the coin could be deadly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think so. I mean, he was a you know a little old guy from Ireland who didn't have much education, but he certainly learned life on, you know, on a more hands-on approach.
Right, a lot of street smarts. Uh-huh.
Right. Fascinating, though, is, you know, just the slow shifts and persona that LaVey took on. From what I was reading, he used to hold kind of a an occult lecture at his house on Saturday nights, just prior to the formation of the Church of Satan. And
right.
These people that he considered to be adept would, you know, all come out. And, you know, I suppose, you know, he'd say what he had to say about whatever particular subject it was, and then they would throw in their two cents or, you know, marvel or Google at whatever ideas or concepts he had found. And, you know, and All it took was one person suggesting that he had the stuff to create a new religion. And, you know, before long he was in the bathroom shaving his head bald and, you know, declaring Las Purgas as, you know, the first day.
Yes.
Ground zero. Yes. Year one. So, you know, they were just gradual shifts all throughout his adult life that, you know, helped him manifest, you know, the man that we see pass on in the, what was it, the late 90s, like 97, right?
When he died?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was 1997, I think, yeah.
If I remember correctly, his death certificate actually says Halloween of 97, but people have argued that he actually died on the 29th of 1997.
Yeah, 29th, 30th, 31st, something like that.
Right. Now, what I actually find very fascinating, because LeVay had three daughters, each by a different woman. His middle daughter, Zina.
Daughters and a son.
Pardon me?
I believe he only had two daughters and a son.
Let me go back to the wiki page here real quick to double check my facts. But if I remember correctly, he had three daughters.
Hmm. Not to my knowledge.
Well, we'll see in just a second. But anyhow, the middle one, Zina. Actually claimed shortly after LeVay's death that LeVay's death was attributed to a curse that she had put on him just a few months before he passed.
Yeah, I heard that.
And she actually stated this in some real public format. I'm looking right now for both, you know, facts, so just bear with me for a second.
That's her greatest claim to fame, and that's pretty damn sad. I don't know. It just sounds to me like she's got serious daddy issues.
Yeah, I'd say she did too. Well, you know, her mother, who never actually married LeVay, after their long relationship, actually sued him for palimony.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, the division between the two of them was so strong that the daughter felt she needed to choose sides, and she chose the side of her mother.
Yeah.
Yep, here it is. She was interviewed on Christian radio by the radio personality Bob Larson, and that's where she stated that she was directly responsible for her father's death by ritual curse.
Yeah. To me, that just sounds like so much bullshit, but whatever. That's what she wants to believe.
Right. Let me see. I'm looking for the actual children now. I should have, like, printed this up and highlighted it like I normally do, but I figured this was a subject that I'm pretty familiar with, so it wouldn't be a big to-do.
Well, it's the spirit of Anton LeVay that I think is the most important anyway, and, you know, what he's done for not only religion and magic and psychology and showmanship. You know, I think he's done more in the 20th century than practically any other magician or religious leader or psychologist, psychiatrist, or con artist, or showman. I think he was the real deal. And, I can't think of anyone surpassing him, let alone, you know, coming up to his standards, pretty high standards.
I would completely agree if being a shock artist of sorts is, you know, some kind of a skill. I would say he's definitely the king of it. I think that even Marilyn Manson or some of the more later day shock artists still didn't have the appeal and the ability to deliver like LaVey did. He seemed to always have control of the situation when talking to people. He seemed to always know exactly how to move the conversation to, you know, to further.
Right. Plus there was an authenticity and an internal consistency and definitely a sense of humor that went along with him and his discussions and his monologues and his writing. And I think that can't be beat either. If you want to, while we're waiting, I could pull up the Joe Pyne very early interview with LaVey.
Yeah, actually, that played a big part in our title, so.
Okay, yeah. That's, I think, the first time he calls himself the Dirty Pope or the Black Pope, giving, you know, anonymous credit to someone that had called him that. Okay, give me a sec and I'll try it.
The wire services and newspapers carried a story out of San Francisco describing the first satanic wedding ceremony ever performed. The picture showed a nude woman lying on the altar behind the guest, whom you see now, the Reverend Anton Zandor LaVey, who is the founder and high priest of the First Church of Satan. Anton Zandor LaVey uses as somewhat of a credo this timeless quote, "Remember, evil backwards spells live." Somehow that never occurred to me.
It never occurred to me until one of my disciples brought it forth, and I imagine it's quite true with many of us.
How often do you have to shave your head to make it shiny like a devil?
I have to put Vaseline on it as well to keep it shiny. I shave it once a day. Can I give a plug?
Is that the odor you're giving off now, Vaseline?
No, that's
going to fool me.
That's musk.
That's musk.
That's the goatee scent you smell.
For sure it's not frankincense and myrrh.
No.
What is this ring you're wearing here? It looks like it's weighing your hand down.
Well, no, it's a magical ring.
It is?
I have little children rub it, make a wish, and it comes true.
Little children come near you?
Of course.
Little children. What kind of a wish did that ring ever make come true?
Well, I would say a great many wishes, but we won't go into them.
Now, you call yourself a satanic priest.
Yes.
Is that the opposite of God?
No, because Satan is a god, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you, then, the Dirty Pope, or what?
Oh, I guess you could call me that if you want to say the Black Pope or the Dirty Pope or the advocate of, for example, the kingdom of night or darkness. No one's ever come forth so far and spoken up for the devil. Everybody that's made rules and regulations concerning the devil or the devil's work, the devil's activities, have been people that have been very righteous people, people during crusades, people...
Well, I'm not too righteous, but on the other hand, I think you're a bit of a ding-a-ling, let's face it. Were you ever a religious fellow?
I would say not particularly.
You're a young man.
I'm a religious fellow now, though.
How old are you?
I'm 36.
36. Who ordained you a satanic priest?
I would say probably I received the call. Just as any fundamental...
Most of us do, but we fight it.
Why fight it? This is, of course, the whole principle of my religion, is all of the...
What do you mean you received the call? You mean one day the devil said, go out, Anton Zandor LaVey, and give people hell. Is that what happened?
That's about it. That's about it. Because people like to have a hell of a time, don't they?
Well, of course, there are all kinds of definitions of that.
Well,
now, I don't, you know, I mean, to marry two people without a license in front of a naked babe lying up on an altar, I don't know what that is.
Well, seriously, there are explanations for these things. And how I started was as a result of various reverse forms of therapy. I haven't been a satanic priest all my life, as you probably gathered.
You've probably been an inmate part of your life.
Well, an inmate in possibly a pretty big institution.
Are you at all afraid that someday after you get through this big put-on, with your little red yo-yo and your big fat ring and your shiny bald head, that when they do pack you away...
Well, now, wait a minute.
If there's any justice, you know, you've got to really get it.
Are you planning on training a lot of little devils?
Only those that wish to become little devils.
Are you married?
Oh, yes.
You have any little devils?
Oh, yes, I have two.
Are you going to raise them as satanic kids?
Certainly, but not to go around chopping people up and sacrificing human beings, just to...
That would be the greatest reward of all if your kids some night would creep in and set fire to you and your lion.
Well, no.
Huh?
No.
And then dance around with pitchforks saying, look at daddy, look at daddy.
Now, if you sleep with your lion, where does Mrs. Devil sleep? She sleeps with the lion, too, you see. Not between us, though. The lion's on one side.
It makes for a nice group.
I don't believe in separating church and state.
There are some people in the dock who would like to speak to you. We'll be going to the dock and the devil after these words.
Okay, so that was it.
Yeah, actually, it comes back with a real quick, I think a couple more knocks, and then he says that's all the time they have today.
Yeah, yeah.
What I actually find most
the video looks good, too. I mean, you can find it on YouTube very easily. It's just called Anton LaVey Interviewed by Joe Pyne. It's P-Y-N-E. 1966 or 1967, although that doesn't make too much sense because, you know, he started it in 1966. That's when the Church of Satan was founded. So this is probably more like 1969, I would think. But anyway. It's pretty interesting interview. And, it's funny and it's interesting. And you can see LaVey's charisma. And he's taking the knocks from that Joe Pyne guy pretty well and sometimes turning things around. So Joe Pyne looks just as, if not more ridiculous than LaVey.
Yeah, he certainly, actually the method in which he does it is very fascinating to me. He seems to almost, if it's a phrase that's attacking him, he seems to take one key word out of that phrase and use it to kind of boomschwaggle, I guess, for lack of a better term, the host. Where, like, for instance, when he says, "What you received the call from the devil," and he said, "Go out and give him hell, Anton," and he takes it and he says, "Well, that's pretty much it. I mean, who doesn't like to have a hell of a time?"
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely got the resonance of certain words down pat, and he can lead a conversation and, manipulate things to his way of thinking, to his desire. And that's kind of lesser black magic. And it's definitely part of the left-hand path. So I think LaVey is most definitely, a prominent figure in satanic history, I guess. One thing I wanted to talk or ask about, especially if someone wants to call in with their opinion, that is, if they think that, if Satanism has legs, I guess, like the satanic message or the satanic paradigm, not necessarily all the outer trappings or the surface part of Satanism, but the essence of it, the core, the soul of what it is, what it means to be a Satanist. Does that still carry over? I mean, does that still resonate with people? Is it, even though it may not be part of Satanism anymore, or, like, for instance, I don't consider myself a Satanist really anymore, but I don't think anyone holds LaVey in a higher regard, a higher esteem than myself. And, I consider him a role model to some degree, to a large degree. And, I still read the Satanic Bible and in his other writings from time to time. And, but at the end of the day, I don't consider myself a Satanist. I don't call myself a Satanist. I have a different religion, and the Satanism that's grown after LaVey passed away has, you know, in a way been sort of corrupted or perverted from what it originally stood for. So my question is, you know, does the satanic spirit live on in others? Has it been influencing other people who are not Satanists themselves now and are not part of any kind of satanic church or religion? But they do have that satanic spirit, that sort of demonic mindset or birthright or something, or destiny. I don't know.
If anybody wants to call in and comment on this, the number is 347-989-1371. Again, that's 347-989-1371. I still consider myself very much a Satanist. I reject things that I don't feel work and have become dogmatic or stale, but I embrace the idea of being the antithesis,
right.
You know, the opposer, and I cherish that. You see, you know, actually in a couple of things I wrote some time ago, the iconoclastic concepts are pretty crystal in my personal philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very much a do-what-you-will type of guy.
So for you, those things go hand-in-hand with what people consider to be Satanism.
For me, I think that those are key attributes to what LaVey was actually moving towards, you know, getting rid of those hindrances and limitations, you know, exploring every aspect of yourself, you know, and understanding through indulgence and obviously responsibility of your indulgences, you know, exactly what makes you tick. I think these were the concepts that LaVey was getting at when, you know, he started this whole thing out. You know, he was, kind of a joker in ways, so it makes sense to me that he would choose something so radically different.
Right. Kind of a prankster.
You know.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
I said, yeah, kind of a prankster.
Yeah. So that makes real good sense why, you know, think he would choose something so radically different and why he would have such a ambiguous history himself, you know.
Yeah.
Saying one thing and maybe doing the other, or maybe doing nothing but saying one thing. So I very much consider that to be a cornerstone of my own personal philosophy. However, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you finish. Sorry, finish what you're saying.
No, however, you know, like I said, the things that I feel have, you know, come to a stop or, you know, they've faltered prematurely. You know, those things I've chucked out. I've cut them right out of my own personal philosophy. And obviously I've embraced other ideologies that, you know, further it. I think one thing that LaVey may have been possibly incorrect about, and he actually mentions it I don't know if he mentions it in the documentary Satanists or if it was another one, but one of the things he mentioned in the interview with Joe Pyne was that he's an inmate in a much larger institution. I think he had a good, solid understanding that the reality that we lived in was like a prison.
Right. But don't you think he kind of used Satanism as symbolic opposition to the status quo. And for me, I think that Satanism now is almost too wrapped up in certain trappings and, you know, little outer things that don't, you know, it's, now it's all about aesthetics instead of substance. And I think if you still want to oppose reality and you want to stand against society and the world and the universe, that Satanism may not be the best avenue to take, or you know, the best symbolism or metaphor, but maybe it is. I mean, we still live in a Christian culture, and Satanism is, you know, the direct opposite of Christianity is, or is supposed to be. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess to some people, you know, Satanism can still embody that iconoclasm, that struggling against the mainstream. But for other people, it becomes a little bit more of a crutch, and it becomes just style over substance. And, you know, it becomes more about the look or the music or, you know, rebelling against your parents rather than, you know, what I guess you and I, old school Satanists, would consider real Satanism.
Right. Well, I have to agree with that in some senses, but I think LaVey himself's biggest mistake, and he mentions it in one of the interviews that I watched this morning. I'm trying to remember which one. But he mentions that rather than, you know, try to, you know, separate yourself from the world and, you know, do all these things that are right. Instead, his philosophy is that, you know, you embrace all the things of the world and take full advantage of them and live without them and live within them. And I see that as being the downfall and what's actually, you know, what started the snowball effect that we have now with this more materialistic and image-based Satanism over philosophical iconoclasm or, you know, religious iconoclasm.
Right.
I really wish that I'd known we were going to get into this because I've written down the exact quote that he says. But what he pretty much is stating in this is that, again, he's, you know, his deal is all this stuff is bad. You know, so you should just, you know, revel in the fact that you're doing something bad and enjoy it because it's bad.
Right. Right. Definitely. Well, we only have, you know, an hour or less, so it's really difficult to cover anything in depth. So obviously this is just kind of our own brief subjective take on LaVey and what he's done. Also, just, I don't know how long this is going to take, you know, just quickly interject, and maybe it's going to lead to more discussion, but not so much in Satanists, but the second documentary, I think it's called The Black House. I know he talks a lot about artificial companions, like mannequins and, you know, wax representations, facsimiles of real people, androids. He talks about in the future how people will be less valuable than companions that can be, you know, programmed or manufactured to be what, you know, someone desires. And he's, you know, he littered his house with, and I think he had one whole separate room, like this sort of saloon area in the basement, with different mannequins and life-size dolls and things like that. That kind of reminded him of that era where he grew up, like the 1930s and 40s. And so he was very into that, and you know, everything that goes into that, the sexual aspects, certainly, you know, controlling another person, the whole BDSM, you know, sadomasochist, you know, the whole, you know, weird sexual kind of connections and stuff like that. And I finally took the plunge, and I was talking to you as before Beast, about the Real Doll.
Right.
That's like a life size, very, very realistic, silicone woman, that looks and feels like a real woman, and, you know, all three orifices, you know, work for sexual gratification. And, yeah, they're very expensive, but they're very, you know, very quality, top of the line, you know, kind of state of the art stuff. So I finally bought one. I took the plunge yesterday, and I ordered one. It's going to be a while. It could be anywhere from like 12 to 16 weeks before I actually get it. But then when I do, I'm going to use it for all kinds of things, not only sexually, but, you know, photography and video, and it'll definitely solve my problem of finding a nude female for the altar for different Cthulhu cult rituals and things like that. So I'm kind of excited about that, and I think that's kind of in keeping with the Levayan aesthetic and, you know, what he was thinking about the future and different foresight and prophecies that he had about human interactions and relationships.
That's fucking awesome. I don't know what else to say to that except for that's fucking awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it's gonna be cool. It's I was on the fence for a while, thinking, you know, at first I was thinking, oh, this is really beyond the pale. This is really weird and kind of creepy. This is almost too much. But I was very fascinated by it too. You know, it was kind of like my reaction to horror movies and stuff when I was a kid. You know, I was kind of scared of it, kind of freaked out by it. At the same time, I was very attracted to it and very fascinated by it. And the night before that, the night before last night, I was dreaming about the Real Doll. You know, not in like a sexual fantasy way, but I was dreaming about the acquisition. You know, it was just turning over and over in my mind, thinking about like, oh, you know, maybe I should order this thing, or, you know, I should get this thing. And, you know, just thinking about all the different aspects. And then that kind of cinched it for me. Then I'm like, you know what, it's on my mind, and it's not going away, you know, this idea I have. So, I just kind of went with it and was like, you know what, I'm going to, yeah, like I said, it's expensive. It costs a pretty penny, but I think over the long haul, for all the use I'll get out of it, it'll be worth it. Plus, it'll just be very interesting and, if nothing else, a conversation piece.
Well, I know, I'm curious. There's obviously got to be different grades of models. What's the price range of one of these, from like your basic edition to the super deluxe fucking orgy machine?
Well, there's pretty much just one type. I mean, there are certain upgrades. You can get a bit more realistic eyes. You can get it with tan lines, which I thought was kind of cool, and I'm not exactly sure what the upcharge on that is. You can get it with more realistic eyebrows, things like that. But otherwise, it's about $6,000 for a Real Doll. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's yeah, definitely, you know, an expensive sex toy. or piece of art, or, you know, or what have you. But then again, so is something that people, other tools or instruments or things people think they need, like, you know, a sound system or, you know, a super giant TV or a snowblower or, you know, a riding lawnmower or something like that. And, you know, I feel that, you know, if I'm going to, if it's something that is going to improve my, not only my sex life, but, you know, the more creative, interesting aspects of my day-to-day life, my lifestyle, my personality, then why not spend the money there instead of, I don't know, buying a really, really nice snowblower or something that I might get some use out of as well, but, you know, it's not really going to tickle my fancy. I'm not going to, my eyes aren't going to light up. I'm not going to be like, wow, this is so cool, you know, when I'm on a riding lawnmower, you know, cutting my grass. So it's an investment. So, and I don't know if how much I'm going to enjoy it at the end of the day. I don't know how much use I'm going to get out of it, if it's going to be worth it. But I figure that it probably will be worth it. So, and I can afford it, so why not?
Certainly. I think it's, fuck, I'm super proud of you at this point, man.
Thanks. I know we talked about using it in the movie or the multiple videos that you and I are planning on doing for the Touched by the Tentacle project, and we'll probably use the real doll in much of that. Not only that, but the tentacle, the prosthetic rubber painted special effects tentacle that I recently acquired, which you can also see on YouTube. And I think the combination of both of those things is going to be pretty magic. So I'm excited about that.
Now, I know this is way off a topic, and it's actually in the same lines of what we're talking about right now, but it's way off the show's topic. But I've got to know, will she come with a predetermined name, or are you going to do some kind of a ritual to determine her name, or...?
That is a really good question. No, I'll probably come up with a name in the ensuing weeks, but I have to wait before she actually arrives. However, when she does arrive, I certainly will be doing some sort of ritual to sort of, I don't know, consecrate her or baptize her or maybe to awaken or facilitate her more realistic qualities or human-like companion qualities. So, yeah, there'll definitely be some ritual magic going on to try to, you know, welcome her into not only the Cthulhu cult, but my own life and my relationship with her. So, yeah, definitely there's going to be something like that.
That's freaking awesome. Are you intending to, you know, obviously go out and buy a few different outfits or whatever, so...
Yeah. I already have a couple things that I've gotten over the years from ex-girlfriends. So I've got, like, a couple items in my closet already that are just kind of, you know, collecting dust. But no, I'll buy other things. You know, I'll probably buy some sort of like Catholic schoolgirl uniform outfit or something. You know, maybe some sort of, you know, different kind of lingerie. I think it will come with some sort of lingerie or bra and panties. But yeah, I'll probably buy some other stuff too, some actual clothes. I don't know. Yeah, I can dress it up however I want, and that's one of the cool things about it, I guess. There are also other videos I've seen on the internet, like on YouTube, real doll owners and different documentaries, and some of these guys treat them like their own girlfriend. I mean, like it's a real woman, and that's kind of the appeal to some of them. Sometimes people just see it as, like, you know, a piece of finely crafted artwork And then sometimes people just see it as a sex toy and put it away in the closet whenever they're not using it. So.
Now, I think, you know, actually touching back on the main subject of this show, I think LaVey would completely and totally just be absolutely pleased.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do.
If you have a fantasy that, you know, that you can't fulfill any other way, then, and yeah, he'd be all for it. He said, he'd be like, then yeah, you should do it. You should, you know, if you can't find what you need just randomly in the outside world, and you have the means, then you should buy whatever your particular fetish or hang-up is and enjoy it and get the most use out of it and have that be a focal point of your life. And that's
sure, I think, you know, beyond everything that you're saying, I think he would immediately recognize the kind of social intolerance that there really is for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it would amuse him to no end.
Yeah, I think he'd get a big kick out of it, yeah.
Yeah, he might even, like, you know, fly to your house to hang out with you and her for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would definitely think that would be a big kick and definitely accept him. And I know other people, my friends and other cultists and people like that are going to come to my house and they're going to want to look at it and touch it. And, you know, perhaps they might want to try her out too. And who knows, if I'm in the right mood and they ask me nice, maybe I'll let them.
Right. Well, no matter what, I would certainly keep a big bottle of sanitizer, hand sanitizer, available, so that way anybody who gets creeped out, you know.
It definitely comes with its own cleaning kit. That's one of the things that you get. And, yeah, you're supposed to clean it, like, after every use and, you know, use plenty of lube, et cetera.
Sure, I'm not so much worried about them, though. I'm worried about you, you know.
I'll definitely thoroughly clean anything, you know, not only before and after I use it, but anyone else, especially anyone else using it.
Right.
But that probably won't happen. I probably won't share her too much, I don't think. But maybe I'll use her sometimes with other girls that I date or I bring home or I just have sex with. You know, she could be the third part of a two-girl threesome. You know, the fact that she's not alive might put a slight damper on proceedings, but still, I think it's better than nothing. Better than just one girl, one guy. That's fun, of course, a lot of times, but sometimes it gets old and if you want a threesome. You know, it's difficult to engineer sometimes.
Well, speaking of plugging holes, we're already inside of our last 15 minutes. I was going to go ahead and run a quick commercial set and then come back and just bullshit. So.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, here we go.
The Ooze is brought to you by the following. CultofCthulhu.net. Awaken with the Cult of Cthulhu. CreativeOddityStudios.com. Making art a dirty word since 1998. Lulu.com/Satanus. Purchase publishings by Avenger Satanus. Artist, author, cult visionary. Find titles such as Cthulhu Cult, Libre AO, and the role-playing game Empire of Satanus. Lulu.com/CreativeOddities. Find publishings written by Jason Sorrell, artist, author, such as The Tattoo Apprentice, The Baphomet Codex, and The Devil's Due. FearTheBeast.com. Let the madness begin. Catch the Dollies, a Vigilant of Vision. YouTube.com/iPriestSatanus. Now back to our program.
Yeah,
all right.
And we're
back. Fuck, man, that's absolutely awesome. I'm just making myself laugh because, you know, that's one taboo I've never actually mentally really explored. And so now I'm excited to hear about your adventures. And
yeah, I'm sure that's what it'll be. It'll definitely be an adventure. You know, I like many people, the first time I saw the whole Real Doll thing was on this HBO documentary called Real Sex, and they showed a little bit of like the factory where they're made and the people behind it, and you know, the kind of customers that purchase such a thing, and you know, it was kind of impressive then. I think the company formed in 1996, and in since then, in the decade plus years but they've been in operation. They've definitely made improvements, and the dolls are a lot more realistic now, and, you know, not only in look, but in feel. And they're a lot more customizable, too. There's like 9 or 10 different body types or body shapes with different measurements, and there's 15, at least 15, maybe more, different faces that you can have put on your doll. And there's different, you know, you can get anything from fair skin to you know, lightly tan or tanned, or more Asian or more like African American skin tones. You can choose, you know, the different kind of makeup, the different kind of hair, and they've got a whole bunch of like different galleries of different dolls that they have, and with different variations, so you can like mix and match, and you can really create your own perfect girl. I suppose that's one of the appeals.
Very cool.
You don't have to be satisfied with just, you know, whatever comes down the pike. You'll almost play God in a way, and you can totally control and manipulate your fantasy and your fantasy girl to whatever you want.
I just think that's fucking great, man. I really don't know much else of what to say except for that's fucking cool.
Well, yeah, I'd be, you know, I'm definitely going to talk about this and make videos and photos and, you know, probably blog about it too, the whole experience. And, you know, people are probably going to have different questions like, you know, what's it like? And, you know, how, just like they asked me with the Cthulhu cult, like, how far do you take this? And, like, are you serious? And don't you belong in a mental institution somewhere? And things like that.
Aren't those the best kind of questions, though?
They are. I like those questions. Because it means that I'm getting to people. And I'm getting underneath their skin. And I've definitely fucking with consensual reality. So those are the best kind of questions. And I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be like. But if people do have questions, then, definitely people should ask and inquire. And I'll try to anticipate people's questions and let them know what it's like. You know, it would be great if I could, you know, totally replace, you know, a girlfriend or a wife or a companion. I don't think it will. I don't think it will for me. I don't think it can 100%. But I think it would make a nice addition to someone's life. Hopefully it'll make a nice addition to mine, in my world.
If anything, it certainly will set you apart, man.
Yeah, it'll definitely set me apart, all right.
I'm just fucking absolutely thrilled. I think that's great. I don't know. I guess there's just something in the idea of exploring something that's so absolutely shocking in nature.
Yeah, it is pretty shocking. You're having sex with a synthetic human. And you're spending
well,
time
I mean,
with it. So that's pretty bizarre and creepy to a lot of people.
And there are a lot of times in you and I's conversations where I pretty much weird you out because of some of the things that I'm into. And
not weird me out like oh my God, like I'm so freaked out, I can't believe you just told me that, like that, but freaked out as in like, oh, that's very surprising, and like I've never done that, and that's kind of a trip, you know, like
right.
That.
So it's nice to see the shoe on the other foot, I guess is what I'm saying.
I bet it is. You're like, whoa, okay, that's different. And
yeah.
You went there.
Well, I'm not really surprised. I guess I would be surprised had we not had a little bit of a conversation about it.
Yeah.
But that conversation indicated to me that you were seriously considering moving on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was kind of on the fence then, but I didn't know which way it was going to go. But I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I kind of became slightly obsessed. I was like, you know what? I gotta do this because I gotta find out what it's like. And it could be so cool, you know, potentially that I'll feel like I'm totally missing out if I don't do this. You know, sometimes in life that's, you know, I just get this kind of realization, and then I'm just like, I gotta do it. You know, maybe that's like starting the Cthulhu cult. Like, you know, it could go all horribly wrong, or it could be utterly fantastic. I gotta know how it's gonna turn out. I gotta do it. You know, no
sure.
One's gonna do it for me. So I gotta take a plunge.
I guess I'm assuming that you're gonna build all the psychodrama that you can into each interaction with this.
I probably will.
So I mean, I think if anything, you could, you know, write short stories about your experiences, and
yeah.
People can live vicariously that way.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of, you know, we talk the talk about creating your own reality and things like that, but this is definitely a weird, wild step into walking the walk, and really, really, you know, fashioning and engineering your own reality. You know, this is like taking one of the most important parts of your life, one of the central pillars of somebody's lifestyle, which is their significant other, I guess. And for a lot of people, they are, you know, they're just taking the bull by both horns or grabbing the reins. And they're doing what they want. They're, you know, creating their own artificial person. And, you know, the person that's going to make them happy. And, it's a very selfish thing. And it's very, you know, very ego-driven. And sexually charged. And I guess very satanic. It's a very satanic thing to do. So, you know, I'm not going to be at the forefront because, shit, people have been doing this for over a decade. But I'm happy to join their ranks because, you know, it's maybe it's the next step. Maybe it's the precursor to Blade Runner, where you get replicants and pleasure models like Pris running around. And, you know, it's all futuristic and awesome and you got female androids doing whatever to you. You know, we're not there yet, but this is maybe the closest thing we have to that.
Right. Well, with all that in mind, man, I just want to mention that only on the Ooze can we go from the Dirty Black Pope to the Harlequin High Priest, and it all flow together. So, you know, we've got about a minute left.
The Harlequin High Priest, is that me?
Yes, that would be you.
Oh, okay.
Harlequin is a shade of green, correct?
What's that?
Harlequin's a shade of green, correct?
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, it is?
It's, It is.
Okay. I didn't know that. I thought you meant Harlequin as in more like a jester or a joker or like a masked figure. Or.
Well, that's why I thought it was fitting, but it's a shade of green.
Oh, it is. Okay. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. Cool. That's the first time I've ever heard someone refer to me like that, but I like it either way.
All right, man. Well, the show's over, so we'll talk to everybody next week.
Yeah, it's bright green. It's a bright shade of green.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Later.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Ooze does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.